change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, this is Mickey Desai. Welcome to another episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. I am very happy today to be speaking with Jonathan Wright. Jonathan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. What is your official title?
So my official title is, I mean, I'm a board member. I don't know if there's an official title for anything. I'm a board member. I'm a of counsel at a law firm. I'm a founder of a company. So I don't really have an official title. It's Jonathan is fine.
That's very cool. Can you tell us a little bit about your history in the nonprofit sector?
Sure. So I think like one of the most important things over the course of a career in the profit sector is to give back to the community. And so I've always tried really hard to figure out ways that I could do things that interested me and that I could add value to and that could enrich me and enrich the community. So I started out early on. I was a pretty young, so I'm a lawyer by training. I started out pretty young, as a young lawyer, and I figured out as a corporate thing I could get on boards and help on boards because I knew a lot about board organization and board structure and corporate governance, and whether it's for profit or nonprofit, it's a knowledge that transfers really well. And so I participated in a program to get on the board of the Intamin Theater in Seattle, and I did the 1 year as just a board observer, and then became a board member, and we did the first Outside of New York Angels in America presentation. It was a premiere. It was a pretty interesting play. I had some, and ultimately ended up on a HBO and a series. And so that was my first foray into the nonprofit world as a board member. I mean, you know, I had donated money to nonprofit organizations and done the nonprofit, like, you know, raise money to get out of jail kind of stuff, but not so much as an active role. And then from then on, I was kind of hooked because you meet some really interesting people, and then there's a lot of like alternative to what being in the corporate world, people, so artistic people and creative people that make you a better at what you do in the private world. Plus you help them improve their contributions to culture and the like. I worked on a thing called Cap and Gown. We founded a early education nonprofit organization to basically give people mentors in like sixth grade and to eighth grade, because we found that there's evidence that shows that college admission and applications go way up if you get people early on that don't have mentors who went to college. And then after that, I was a board member of something called Consolidated Works in Seattle, which is an arts-based organization. And then subsequent to that, I moved down to LA. I mean, moved down to San Francisco, and I'm on the board of the Bay Area Boys and Girls. I mean, Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Bay Area. And then I'm on the board of Copper Canyon Press, which is in Washington State. It's a preeminent poetry publishing house. So that's kind of. That's I've also advised a nonprofit board and the like, but like those are my active roles in the nonprofit world, other than, you know, capital and cash contributions.
Right. Well, let's go back to the beginning. You talked about your time in the corporate sector, and you were looking, there was something you said, and I can't remember how you put it, but it was like you wanted to look something to more round out the personal experience to find causes that you were interested in. Which is, I think, what leads a lot of us to look into board service, or at least into volunteering in the first place. But for you, it was more than just being a volunteer. You wanted something other than the opportunity to just show up and like help with a silent auction. You wanted something more than that, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, when you're a young associate at a law firm, you have a lot of student loans, and so you make some pretty decent money, but like. You know, lawyers are pretty dry, I worked with a lot of investment bankers, you know, people that were creative are working with founders and entrepreneurs and startup people. But I always felt that I was missing something from, you know, and I lived in New York for a few number of years and you know, I think the art space was particularly important. You know, as I've grown older, you know, the business side of the things I did were always things that helped the common good. So I worked in biotechnology and, you know, helped fulfill unmet needs of patients. And then, you know, I worked, most recently I started it's a for-profit health services company in the autism space. So So I think I was a little different in that, like, I think now, since I've done a lot of these things that are like common good, helping people, businesses for profit, I want to do more things that I have actual direct contact with people that I can help and benefit from help, because it's personally fulfilling. So like the Big Brothers, Big Sisters of the Bay Area, I hope to get to meet people that do that. And I hope to get to meet the kids that they're mentors to. And then I do some other stuff that's not really nonprofit, but I act as a mentor to some kids in the old high school that I went to that needed mentors, that don't have the family members that went to private schools and the like. And so I'm always trying to figure out ways to like take the things that I think people helped me with to get to where I am today and pay them back.
Interesting. So is that why I hear that you're drawn towards arts, nonprofits, and educational types of causes?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I think those are the kind of things that I think that both are personal. I mean, early on, they're very personally fulfilling, you know, but like I was saying, that like, I think that the older I get in my career, I kind of want to do things that are actually more closer to the people that we're actually serving. So like, I want to be able to, because like one of the most touching things in my entire career was when a kid who had autism came to my office as the CEO of the company and said, "Hey, I wanted to thank you for starting this company because without this company, I never would have got this job, much less been able to handle the interview."
Okay.
And so like, that's the kind of stuff that like, that is like, that will stick with you and motivate you for doing good for years. And so I want to get that same feeling again. I mean, I want to be able to say like, you know, I actually did something physically, or, you know, I was actually instrumental and intertwined in that. And I think like, these more active community service nonprofit boards versus artistic boards, which are, you know, it's a good thing for society and culture, but I think like, you know, it's a less of people in dire need of social remedying social inequities or remedying income inequities, and so like now that's kind of become more of my focus.
Interesting. What leads you to that? What leads you to the income inequity cause?
Well, I think part of it is as I progressed in my career, you know, I did a lot of things, like I said, that were businesses to help other people with things that were meaningful in their lives, like healthcare and environmental causes, like purifying water and treating wastewater treatment. But I think like, you know, now I'd like to do that. It's more meaningful to me to do it without a economic remuneration. It's more meaningful that, you know, I'm actually taking some of the things that I've earned over the course of my life and using those to be able to contribute to people's, the betterment of other people. And that makes it that much more meaningful to me.
Right. Yeah, no doubt. Now there's a couple of ways I think we could go with this conversation. You founded your own organization from scratch, right?
Yeah.
And I also want to talk about how you did that, and maybe use that as a diving board into how to talk about supporting membership on nonprofit boards. Cause I think that, you know, when the startup board is pretty critical to an organization's success. So I guess it's a twofold question or a two forked question. What was it like as a founder setting up an organization from scratch, and what was it like building and supporting that startup board?
Yeah. So I have a little bit of an advantage cause I was a corporate and business lawyer. And so over the course of my life, I've probably started five organizations, both nonprofit and profit. One nonprofit, I would say, and then one health services company, which in some places they're for profit, some places they're not for profit. And you know, I think like that's just a terminology for tax benefits in, mm-hmm. in healthcare. I think like, you know, big nonprofit hospitals make billions of dollars a year.
Right.
And they're still nonprofit, but they do that for structural reasons and tax reasons. But so back to the answering the question, I think, you know, anybody with an idea and if it's a good idea and you can get other people to buy into it. So like, I'll talk about the cap and gown, which is the thing in Seattle that was early education support, mentor support organization. Mm-hmm. It wasn't my idea. A colleague of mine came to me and said, "Hey, I have this idea. This is something we did when I was in college. And I want to like take that idea from college and start it here in Seattle." And so I was like, yeah, I'm absolutely happy to participate in that. Whatever I can do to help. And part of the things were, you know, giving advice on structure and, you know, what the things you need to do to get a 501c3 status so you can get tax-free donations. And so all of these things, like no one is a single, you can't be a single person army. You know, you have to have a team and you have to find people. And, you know, I think that the key thing is finding people that are passionate about whatever you're doing. They'll be willing to contribute time and effort and resources to forming the nonprofit. And I think, like, you know, I think for most good causes, you find people, you know, people, depending on the time constraints and you find people that are passionate about it. People have been touched by this, or they have a strong motivation to do something on the, and so that's the real thing. I think, like, you need a core group of passionate members, and you need more than one person. It's really hard to do something as a one person army. So that's kind of the high level advice I'd give, or thought process on how you start nonprofits.
So to inspire the passion in people to support the cause. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, so I think you have to find people that are passionate about the cause first. Yeah. And when we're talking about the chicken and the egg problem, I think, like, the first is find people that are passionate about the problem. Oh, and that can perform and execute on taking that passion into doing, right, rather than just being. So, like, you have to take risks. You have to do stuff to move things forward. And so, like, It's an interesting mix of person, and I think early on it's really, really the team is really critical. I mean, I think, like, you know, it's not just about having money and an idea. It's actually about having an idea. I mean, when I say money, like donors and the like, support. It's about having an idea you're passionate about, finding other people that buy into that same passion, because you fundamentally need to spread the word, and you need to find more people that are either passionate about it or just they have a philanthropic perspective and they're willing to support your cause. And so a perfect example of that is, you know, I'm a kind of a science nut, and the whole COVID, I was trying to figure out what to do, how I could support that. And so I, on Twitter, I found a guy who is an ex-physicist who writes all these great tweets, and just invited people to a call. And there's a whole bunch of people on there from all different walks of life, strange people like me who are just fascinated by what we can do to help in the pandemic, or that's now hopefully coming to a bit of a conclusion.
Right.
I mean, one of the things was they needed somebody to review a law for a guy who started this thing about the laws that we should put into place for one after we exit COVID. And so, like, I just, you know, I didn't know what to do, but, like, I got on that call and I'm passionate about, you know, public health. And he said, well, can you take this? I'll write some letters for you. Can you send them to your members of Congress, and can you review this proposal for an act for exiting COVID? And so, you know, like, that's fundamentally how you find people, because, you know, you're happy to donate time to things.
Yeah, I asked that question. I mean, having been on a number of boards myself and participating in board recruiting, it sounds like finding a startup board is the same thing as setting up recruiting for an existing board, but with a startup cause, you don't have a track record. You're looking for people who are willing to help you start that track record, is what I'm trying to say, right? Because you're looking to get them to do two things. You're looking to get them to take fiduciary responsibility for basically an unproven entity. And that is a lot more risky than helping recruit someone to an entity that's been around for 10 or 20 years already. There was a point absolutely I was trying to make there, but
you made a good point. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, like, there's way more risk, whether it's a startup nonprofit or a startup for profit, and like, that's why you have to have people that are passionate and like really believe in the cause and are motivated by the cause, particularly in the starting up phase of a nonprofit. Because, like you said, these organizations that have been around for a long time, like the one that I'm on, Copper Canyon Press, that does poetry. They have like 30 Nobel Prize winners and 165 Pulitzer Prize winners by the time I got there. And so, like, you know, like that is like a completely different institution than say this COVID exit strategy organization that basically is one guy who has passion about something and wrote a law and is trying to figure out how to move it forward. He has really limited resources. So I think what you're saying is exactly right.
we've talked about what it means to start up an organization from scratch in terms of harnessing passions and getting new board members to be willing to take the risk and make something move in a positive direction. Once you've established that organization and once things are past the initial startup phases, what do you think the board challenges typically are? What are the board challenges that boards face coming out of startup phase, for that matter?
Yeah. So I think the biggest challenge, so this is interesting. I think one of the biggest challenges is finding the person to execute on the board's vision. So in a nonprofit role, the community is essentially the owner of the company. And so whatever your goal is for that community or that group of people, that's to motivate your board's fiduciary obligations. But finding an executive director or somebody, so one of the things that I found is that, and this is not a judgment on people's whether they're good or bad. It's just that some people have skills and some people don't. And so in a nonprofit world, there's a lot of really passionate people, and passion does not necessarily equal executive function, executive skill, and a lot of that is can't be learned on the job. You know, it's basically like, I'm super excited about doing X, Y, and Z, but I have no idea where to start. Right. How about I'm super excited about shifting from what I'm doing now to doing what you're doing, and I'll take some of that experience I learned at the other place and make your place a success. And it's a really difficult thing to manage as a board, and I think which is basically somebody's super excited about a cause, but they have no ability to no experience to functionally execute on it. And so that's the challenge often in the nonprofit world. Part of it is because, you know, there's a lot less compensation, and so you may sacrifice some skill or some quality of the people you hire to execute on your idea. I think like if you have a good enough board, they can step in, they can nurture the executive director, they can do a lot of those things if they've had experience in other nonprofits. I think the first challenge is finding the people to run the organization, because most board members don't have the time to devote full time to and that's not their job. Their job is to basically, as you said, to have fiduciary oversight of the organization and hire and fire and groom and manage and compensate and develop the executive director, as they call in nonprofits. Generally, it's not the CEO. So that's the first challenge. And I think that the next challenge is companies are, I like to liken them to like human beings. They are organic and they develop their own personalities. And so, you need a good mix of people on the board, whether that's a diverse group of people, or whether that's people from different industries, or people that have, that have experience in solving the type of problem that you're trying to solve, or helping this kind of people, or experts in the fields of what you're doing. Those are all people that are valuable additions to a board, and they can support the, but you also, just because you have those skills doesn't mean that like there's a board chemistry, like a human being and how the cells communicate. And you don't want a cancer on your board, because it'll wipe the whole thing out. It's sometimes hard to like see that something's a cancer, and how do you deal with it? And early on, it can be devastating. As the company matures and gets older, a single individual that's a bad apple is much, much less likely to sink the whole ship, and much easier to deal with. But I think early on, that those kind of personnel problems can be huge issues. But you also want to find people that have can-do attitudes and are enjoyable to be around, because you're going to solve some problems and there's going to be some tough situations. And so you want to find people that make the organization, things tend to recruit people like them. And so you want to basically be optimistic and positive and inclusive, and all these things will help you build a better organization.
Well, I agree with you. I think it's important to set the diversity agenda early.
Yeah,
I think that's critically important for organizations these days. I want to back up for a second, because when I ask other folks what they think the more immediate board challenges are when they're looking at nonprofit boards, almost 90% of the time people will say it's fundraising or funding. And I'm curious that you did not say that. I was kind of expecting you to mention fundraising, but in if I can paraphrase what you said, correct me if I'm wrong here, you said the issue is the biggest issue is not fundraising. It's qualified leadership. It's getting leadership who can take responsibility and know how to do governance.
Yeah. And so I'll tell you why I think that. So who wants to give money to somebody that's going to be flying around or like on a Learjet? Like, so, you know, like people want to see that 95% of their dollar goes to the cause. And so, right. So that's why you want high quality executives and high quality administrators. And because that makes it a lot easier for people to, it will improve your development significantly. And so that's why I say, like, you know, if it's a good cause and you can get five people in a room, you each of those can find 10 people to donate some money, and those 10 people will talk about it that they donate. And so you know, development is I don't have a ton of experience in it. You know, my girlfriend actually is in development for the Yosemite Trust, there's certain organizations where really easy to raise money and you do a lot of it, and like, you know, they support something that, like Yosemite, everybody knows about that, but there's other ones that are new, and so you want to have people that are trustworthy, that people, because they're shepherds of people's money, and so you want to, I think, like in venture capital, when you're raising money as a founder, what you try to do is you try to avoid everything that would make them say no. Mm-hmm. And so anything that's different than anywhere else will make somebody say no, because it's different. I mean, like in terms of like overarching structure and function and you know, employment relationships and all that stuff. So what you want to do is you want to eliminate all those no's.
Yeah.
And so it makes it a much easier yes. And so I think it was Planned Parenthood. It was one of those. It was Planned Parenthood or something like that. And the CEO was, maybe it was Red Cross, but the CEO was making like $3 or $4 million, the executive director or CEO was making $3 or $4 million a year.
Yeah.
And you know, is that reasonable? I mean, how much is enough? You know, that's probably not reasonable. I mean, you know, so like that's going to, I mean, and me as a donor to those things, I look at, like, there's all kinds of external surveys, and I look at those things, and I want to make sure that, like, you know, the money that I'm giving to an organization is used appropriately. And so I think, like, removing the no's makes yes a lot easier.
I like that. Very cool. Jonathan, this is excellent stuff, but we're running out of time. I hope we can revisit some other point and talk more about diversity issues for boards. If a member wanted to ask you any questions or learn more about experiences, how would you suggest they get in touch with you?
Sure. You can get in touch with me, Jonathan at rightadvisory.com. I have a website, rightadvisory.com. It's rightadvisory.com. It's a little bit about me. It's the personal website. Or you can find me on Twitter. I love Twitter. I don't know why I love it so much. It's pretty addictive. My Twitter handle is at right sometime, and that's right, WRIGHT, sometime. And so you can find me on LinkedIn and all kinds of stuff.
Beautiful. Thank you.
And please reach out to me. I love to meet new people.
Absolutely. Jonathan, thank you very much for being my guest today.
Thanks for hosting me, Mickey. Have a great rest of your day.
This has been The Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.
The Snapcast is a production of the Nonprofit Snapshot. Please visit us at nonprofitsnapshot.org to learn more about our consulting work and the ways we can help your organization continue to make the world a better place.